Hello, everybody. Welcome to Health Chatter. Today's show is on men's story about health. It should be an interesting show. We've got a great guest, and we'll introduce him to you in a second. We've got a great crew that's behind the scenes that helps us make all these shows great, and great for you, the listening audience. Maddie Levine Wolf, Aaron Collins, Deandra Howard do our research and help with our recording of the shows. Matthew Campbell is our production person who gets all the shows out to you, the listening audience, in perfect form. Sheridan Nygaard also does background research for us and in our marketing. So they're a great crew. Thank you to all of you. My colleagues in doing the shows are Clarence Jones and Dr. Barry Baines, both wonderful colleagues. This has been a real fun exercise doing Health Chatter for all these episodes that we've done. And so thank you to you as well. Human Partnership is our sponsor for Health Chatter. You could check them out at humanpartnershipalliance.org. And you can check us out at healthchatterpodcast.com for all the different shows, whether you want to listen to them or you can read the transcripts and also the background research for our shows as well. So thank you to all of you. And there's all the information for you. Clarence, I'll let you introduce our illustrious guest for today.
I think that was a wonderful leading illustrious guest. This is going to be a kind of a organic conversation. We've had Sam on our show before talking about a variety of different things. And Sam has, I've known Sam for a while. And what is interesting about Sam has been someone that I have truly enjoyed as it relates to public health, especially around the issue of trauma. But Sam is June, and this show might air in July. I don't know. But for the month of June, we talk about men's health. And Sam has been doing a conference for a long period of time, for over 17 years. In fact, I was at his first conference. So it's been, so we've been doing that for a long time. But I wanted Sam to come on so that he could talk more about that conference. He can talk about his book. But I think this is going to be a rather organic conversation about Black men and about parenting. And so there's some commonalities in birthing and all those kind of things. But anyway, I'm saying all of that to just say, hold on to your seat because we're getting ready to take a ride. So I just want to say welcome, Sam, to Health Chatter.
Well, thank you for having me and allowing me to be on your show. Let's see if we can live up to all that which you just said. How about that?
Okay. So like I said, folks, hang on to your seatbelt because Sam's going to take us for a ride. So let's start off, Sam. Tell us a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get a little bit in talking about some of the work that you've done. But tell me about who you are.
Oh, that, you know, that's, yeah, okay. I am a behavioral consultant, a licensed chemical dependency counselor. I often tell people I'm semi-retired, but for some reason, lately I seem to be just as busy as when I call myself working. Been doing work around chemical health and behavioral health, probably about over 35 years. And my focus over the last probably 17, 18 years has been on trauma and focusing more so, at least initially, on Black male trauma. And how that affects the community as a whole, and what kind of why is it important to really acknowledge and address that trauma, and really look at how it shows up.
Yeah. So Sam, one of the things that it has always intrigued me was, how you entered into this work, but also why do you think the work is so important?
Okay. Well, the thing is, over the years, some of my initial work, I also worked in the past in at Abbott Northwestern Hospital in their LOC unit many years ago. And then I also had a background where I worked initially in terms of what got me interested in leaning towards focusing on trauma, really probably was ignited when I went through the chronic pain clinic in the, I believe it was in the 80s. Because initially I used to be a truck driver for the University of Minnesota and was injured, went through the pain clinic, and actually later on became a consultant to the pain clinic. And one of the things I observed and learned in terms of working with clients in the pain clinic is that everybody suffers, people suffer pain and have difficulty with pain. Not everybody is considered having chronic pain. And then when it came to folks that were in our program, one of the things that was consistent of probably about 69, 70% of the folks had some type of family trauma. Now, people might say, well, bad things happen in every family, but it was, if there was specific types of trauma that showed up most often, chemical dependency in the family, domestic violence in the family were was two of the big ones, and mental health and trauma in the family, right? And how people, because a lot of the folks that we dealt with in the program were high achievers. And so what I figured out was that there was three socially acceptable ways for people to kind of cover their trauma. And that was with perfectionism, caretaking, and workaholism. The idea of staying busy, right? Caretaking, for example, a lot of the folks who, a portion of the folks who came through the program were in the care professions, like counselors, doctors, therapists, and those kind of things. And I always say, I'd rather get in your business because I can't handle mine, and if you talk to a lot of folks who work in therapy, sometimes you'll hear this story in the background about them working through their own stuff and went to school, got their education, that kind of thing. And so that would be what I observed in the mainstream, because that was across the board, But again, I want to emphasize the sociably acceptable ways of covering up your trauma is those kind of things. It's like, think about working with a hardcore perfectionist who's never happy about their stuff, and then wonder why they might not have a lot of friends when they're injured, because they don't, how do you be a consistent friend with somebody who don't realize they remind you of what's wrong with you, and just being around them, right? And so, like, they would be injured, their family, and then they would say stuff, well, my family don't help me. Well, you never allowed your family to help you, right? And so how are they all of a sudden going to start helping you now? And back in the pain clinic, what I loved was talking to the kids, because the kids would tell me everything, right? They, like, yeah, daddy is a pain in the butt. I used to, because he worked all the time, and now all of a sudden he's home all the time and wanted to give us new rules and want to move everything around the house and then act like we're supposed to be happy about that. And the good thing is, it made them have to hear what the family had to say. So that was the foundation of that whole that kind of thing. Because I never used to talk about trauma. I used to talk about it's time to deal with the pain. in the emotional, physical, and psychological pain, and how we overcompensate if one of those areas is feels to come up short, and which led me more later on to working in the more into the community, and specifically in the African American community, because in the hospital that would have been a mixed audience and probably leaned more non-African American in the work. So luckily, I started with that background and worked into the community.
So I've got a question for you, Sam. So you've been in the field a long time,
Yes.
and you're talking about trauma and you're talking about chemical dependency, et cetera, et cetera. So give me your insight on how those manifestations affect health. In other words, you see these people. And you've dealt with these people. Did you have any perception on health overall and how their health was affected by trauma or by chemical dependency or what have you?
Well, the interesting thing is again, we're kind of talking about a couple of different groups. Is like the group that I was dealing with in the hospital, where most, when we finally, towards the end of the program, majority of our clients were middle class individuals, okay, who would actually say they didn't have a problem, right? And so you're talking about chronic pain, that we're also talking about one of the interesting areas around the opioid misuse, right? We've seen that coming way before they even tried to have a conversation about it, you know, because it was easier to chase a pill than to do the physical therapy and to reorganize your life. So you give yourself, your body time to relax. You know, a lot of the, when you talk about the health issues, a lot of, especially with, you know, even though with the folks in the pain clinic, several of them would probably had issues with alcohol before they had issues with pills, right? But the biggest thing is they didn't know how to slow down. If this was easier, you know, I don't, the doctor tells me to go home and rest for 3 4 weeks, and I'm a perfectionist and I'm anal and it's all or nothing, I'm not going to say go home and relax for 3 4 weeks. And probably if there's a pill out there that I can take that will let me get through the day and then suffer that night, and then I have to have another pill. So we're talking about folks who probably had their kind of addictive behavior, but they was covering it up with activity. Yeah, they was covering it up. So addictions, you know, unfortunately, we want to narrow them down. You know, again, when you talk about a hardcore caretaker, that's an addiction on other people's misery, right? And to cover up something that I don't want to deal with. So, and a lot of those folks, when you dealt with them one-on-one, you wouldn't classify them as being somebody who had a chemical problem, because that's what we do in our society. We have defined a certain look, and a portion of those folks would have met that criteria, but they probably wouldn't have never been confronted really about their use or that kind of thing. And if they had a good relationship with their doctor at the time, they could continue to get the pills and not have a problem compared to my clients of color, right? And so, when you talk about addiction, you know, you got various, you know, things about addiction. You know, there's always that data about inheriting addictive traits. In my community, one of the reasons I stopped practicing on a regular basis is nobody initially wanted to talk about trauma, right? And so, if I'm medicating my trauma, and historically, in the community, we've often medicated our trauma. You know, I often tell the story about my father, who worked at a company called International Harvester, And his boss, well, he went through several bosses over his 30 years. His last boss was a 21-year-old college kid who didn't know nothing about manufacturing, but that was his boss. We're talking about a 47-year-old black man who's being called boy all day by a 21-year-old white kid, right? And so now what do you do with that when you got four kids you're trying to raise and you're trying to be a responsible black man and you get home and you're so angry because you would, you want to hurt this little boy. Matter of fact, a couple of the staff did hurt the little boy out of the dock later on. But again, he come home, first thing he reaches for is a Budweiser so he can calm down. If he didn't get his Budweiser, it was hell to pay. So medicating that anger, and then we didn't even talk about the historical anger, medicating the anger with alcohol, medicating the anger with food, yourself with sex. And if you walk backwards, you'll start seeing certain things that have shown up in the community, and you can tie them back to initially not addressing trauma, trying to medicate that. And again,
so Sam, let me ask you this question. So most of the work that you did or you've been involved with is with black men, correct?
No. Well,
no.
Lately, yeah. When I worked in the hospital, mm-hmm. that was primarily white individuals.
Oh, really? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So Barry, I know you've got some thoughts on this. So chime in on this one.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting. Before we went on the air, Clarence and I were having a little conversation about how interwoven so many of the topics are that we talk about here. And I
Absolutely.
Think related to trauma, it's a similar kind of thing. What kind of struck me, Sam, especially with the caregivers, that people, kind of diverted or in a way medicated their trauma by becoming caregivers, right? And
right.
And there's this concept that I read about that relates to personal suffering, but it's the idea of the wounded healer.
Right.
And
exactly.
And that's sort of what was circling around in my brain, this idea that people deal with these life traumas, and it's sort of like a distraction in a way, but it's a way for them to get through the day by, again, providing care, to others, but at the cost that they're not taking care of themselves, really.
And but we also have groups of people who have been relegated to that position of caregivers because
mm-hmm.
that's been their position in America in terms of the hierarchy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you start adding things like historical trauma, cultural differences, and those kind of things, you'll see the nuances that people don't like to deal with. That shows up differently.
Yeah. So, and one of the other things, we did a show on disparities in healthcare, and we know that generally speaking, populations of color don't get the same level of care, don't have the same access to care as do the Caucasian population. I mean, that's sort of what it is. And I was just wondering if from your perspective, does that also wind up playing a role in the options that are available for your clientele, particularly Black men, in terms of what I'm going to say is there a better option for addressing that trauma? And then, well, yeah, but do they have access to it? Because if they're shut off from that, then what, in some ways it makes it worse because, there's something that can be done, but I can't get it or I can't access it. I'm just wondering where, how you kind of see that.
Well, Oh, okay. It's that the word disparity has always been interesting because, yes, there are disparities and they've been there, but that's just the way it's been. But the other piece is the other side. I say I rather deal with the other side. Okay. The fact that I, even if I have health care, I don't use it. So there's a lot more folks who have health care, certainly men, who don't ever use it. Okay. And so when you talk about things that add to disparities, when you have over 300 years of being conditioned to believe that you're less than, why would I use it? If you have over 300 years of, okay, how do I figure out how to fit my manhood in this society that says I'm less than a man, depending on who else is in the room, right? So when you talk about the trauma, not dealing with the trauma actually contributes to those disparities, because the trauma will eat you from the inside out when you don't even realize it. And then you are a, I can, I often say I can talk about being a black man a lot easier than talking about being some other man. Okay. And one of the things about being a black in America, still trying to figure out historically, how do I fit? And how do I get defined as being significant other than being seen as a problem? When you talk about how do we add to the disparity or make the trauma worse, is when, like for example, is if I'm deemed the problem and you treat me like a problem, right? What am I supposed to do, right? And then if I did need help and you don't treat me like a problem, I'm not coming to you for help. So we have these layers of that add to disparity. And then when then the other piece is like, if I only use punitive measures for certain groups of people, okay, we got the data. If I only use punitive responses to black men, and the average white person don't have to deal with me. Matter of fact, they can get up and move if they got a little money, right? So the only thing they know is what they see on TV. And the only time you show me on TV is straddled over a police car, where you got the other person who answers the policeman from their car and don't have to get straddled. And I'm a nice white individual driving by, and I see this often enough. The conclusion is there must be something extra wrong with them. So that adds to the disparity in terms of, now I don't feel no empathy for that person because that's them. Okay.
It's almost like circular thinking, and the circular thinking doesn't get you anywhere.
Right. No, but again, it don't get you nowhere. But the other thing is how do you connect the dots? And see, we want to connect the dots from now going forward. A good part of our population don't want to connect the dots going backwards and then moving forward. And so my focus around male trauma and specifically black male trauma is to say, when you have long continuous trauma, it has an effect on how you see the world and how the world sees you. And that is, so when we break this down, I think, sometimes I think, and this is just my stuff, that we get kind of lazy when we talk about disparities from one direction. Because, if I want to address a disparity, one of the biggest things, and we've seen this, is if you educate me, I might do better for myself. Okay. If I, historically have been seen from a servant role, okay, then I'm more likely to feel better doing stuff for other folks. Because one of the things when you talk about folks who work in the field, one of the things in our community is we feel more feel a lot better doing stuff for other folks than ourselves, because we've been conditioned to do that. We get praised by the community for that. Ooh, you're long suffering. you're such an advocate, and we elevate the trauma or the to the point where, you know, I'm out here giving and people give me credit, and then soon as I get healthy enough to start caring for myself, folks turn on me. And that's front and you know, because again, we're so conditioned to care for others than ourselves, and we get credit for that,
Yeah.
right? And
So Clarence, I know my colleague well enough. You're chomping at the bit.
well,
You're
I'm chomping the bit because I told you this. We had to buckle up our seatbelts, right? Because you know, I know Sam and known Sam for a long time. Sam, you've known Sam for a long time too. So you know what we're going to do. But I really wanted to talk to Sam about his conference. You know, because I mean, I know, and I'm sure you'll find some way to tie trauma into parenting, because some of us have been traumatized by parenting. But Sam is doing a conference coming up fairly shortly, and I wanted to make sure that we talk a little bit about that. And so, Sam, tell us a little bit overview of your conference, but also talk about maybe specifically this one that's coming up.
And his book. He's got a book too.
Yep, you got a book.
Hello. Yeah.
So it's so funny. Well, the conference is the this is our 17th year. We call it Community Empowerment Through Black Men Healing. That's the name of the conference, long name. But that we started the conference in 2009. And what and the reason we started the conference is when there's things that happen in the Black community. You know, we talk about disparities. You know, we'll talk about maybe housing, drug use, or whatever is going on in the community. If we're not talking about how systems contribute to those issues, when we break it down, the next thing comes up is what Black men ain't doing. When you set the system stuff aside, the next thing is what Black men ain't doing. And that's all out of that, you know, how we look at that whole masculinity idea. But what are Black men not doing? And so I thought about that is if after we stop talking about, you know, what system, and it always ends up what about what Black men ain't doing, maybe we should be talking about Black men, right? And what I realized with a colleague of mine, you know, his thing was we gotta, you know, hold this system accountable, and I would say that's true, but we also have to do a certain amount of understanding and accountability within the community at the same time. And we had this argument, and it got loud. The staff got scared. You know, you got, you know, there are only two Black guys that work for the place, and we're in the office yelling at each other. The doors vibrating. Folks scared to hit knock on the door, and then all of a sudden it gets quiet. Right. And then they get really worried. It's like, okay. And then, you know, and then we realized they were outside the door. We opened the door and said, we're good. And what we came to the conclusion was we were both right. Okay. So how do you hold somebody accountable that you don't give grace to? How do you hold somebody accountable you don't give grace to? How do you think about this across the board? We don't recognize male trauma across the board. It don't matter what your group is. Think about that. How do you ignore a whole gender's trauma and then be surprised by the way they treat themselves and treat the people around them? Okay? Because we don't leave no out for men to deal with their trauma, so they share it with everybody else, and the more they suffer, the more the family and the community suffer tenfold. You
It's
know,
kind of like, you know, misery loves company in a boat, but you're still not taking care of the problem.
right. Well, the thing is you got taking care of the problem. It's better if you're not recognizing it, even though the water's all around you the whole time, you know,
Right.
and it's like, and the whole thing is you don't look at the hole in the boat. You say, well, look at the ocean. You know, look at that water, you know. We're surrounded by water. Well, yeah, but what about the water in the boat? You know,
Exactly.
we may, you know, and that's how we've been conditioned to look at it from this kind of victim position. Like we have no hope or no part in this. We have no skills. But what I realized, if my work in dealing with Black men and their trauma came really even more clear when I started doing domestic violence work, because when we do domestic violence work, at least initially, it was always to beat up a man, beat him down, you know, relive what he did to his partner and that kind of stuff, and then build him back up. How do you beat down a population that's already beaten and then think that's going to work? You know, it's like I deal with young men right now who know how to be punished, because they're punished by the community in their own ways. They're punished by the system. They know probably a lot less in some cases of more about punishment than love. So threatening to punish me is not going to change my behavior. And we're seeing it every day on the news since, especially since COVID, right? You know, and so. So that's the thing that fed the idea of the conference. The first conference, what we did is we set up a 1 day conference. We didn't know what we were doing, but we set up 1 day conference, and the conference was all about the question: if we focused on male trauma, would the community improve? And that was we did a full day of that. We looked at education, we looked at parenting. We looked at the church, and we had these workshops. We asked the question, and it made people think differently, right? You know, it made them think about their part. It made them think about why we have to be truthful. Because the thing is I come from a community that has over 400 years of trauma. So our culture is built around surviving trauma. And if we address the trauma, then also, if there is an enemy, we would approach the enemy very differently.
So, it's interesting as you're talking, Sam. It's kind of like what Health Chatter does. It's like, what we try to do is communicate about, in this case, around a variety of different topics. What you did is you provided an opportunity to chat
Right.
openly
Right.
around trauma in this case. And I assume after doing it for 17 years, it's beneficial, or it has been beneficial for the population.
Yeah, one of the things that's changed since, you know, 17 years ago is when I first started having this conversation, I would get a lot of pushback from the older part of the community. It's like, why are you being so negative? Because when you think of trauma, you think of negative, right? That kind of thing. Why are you being so negative? We've been trying to avoid the negative and just live, suck it up. We've been, you know, and then as a community, we get credit for being resilient. You know what that looks like to me? Ain't nobody supposed to be resilient for no 400 years and not learn how to thrive. Okay? And so we're like the Mikey of the community. It's like you can do whatever you want to them, but they'll be resilient. And that's the way it's always been. And that's the way it continues to be. And on top of that, part of our community believe if you haven't suffered enough, you ain't Black enough. So we have built around the whole trauma, because you know, and I when I talked to it, that whole trauma piece, because it's been so much a part of our lives. Because you know, even when we talk about the trauma of during slavery in the church helped folks believe that there was something greater than this life on earth during slavery, right? God, we know you got a place for us. So so I'm gonna suffer now and do whatever I can and do the next thing. Now that evolves over time, right? And help folks give them strength for their day-to-day lives, but at the same time, not addressing the trauma, right? Because both can be done. And that's the best thing. I think that's probably one of the greater things over the 17 years is how much the community, the different parts of the religious community has come along, you know, in talking about trauma more. It could be still a little bit better, but the issue is once clients figure out what trauma is. Because think about it, if you've been surrounded by trauma historically, right, you don't even know you're traumatized because you just work it through, right?
Right.
It's like
It's kind of normal for you.
it's normal as best it can be, but
Right.
again, if you're surrounded by death or crime or whatever, you find a way to live with that because that's what we do. That's what we have. And so the pushback, well, again, was we're resilient. Why are you talking about trauma and that kind of thing? Because and so it was a lot of pushback. Again, now we talk, you hear everybody talking about trauma, but the problem sometimes is they want to say the word trauma and then they want to have a quick fix. And there is no quick fix to dealing with
Yeah.
trauma.
So let me ask you something. So all right, so you've been doing the conference, and I want to get to your book too. So you've been doing the conference for 17 years. It was initially focused around men, correct? And then
Technically.
so I assume way over the course of years, it has implications for women in the community as well. So what did you get any sense of how the trauma was addressed not only for Black men, but also how it affected the information exchange and the conference and the idea behind it, also for the women as well.
Good question. Okay, so again, the name of the conference came out of that first conference.
Yeah.
What people didn't realize, it was never about just men. It was
Okay.
never about just men. The reason
Gotcha.
I say that is if, say, for example, you got three kids and people keep complaining about one kid as the problem kid, and unfortunately ends up being that way, right? Why would you start with the nice kid and not the problem kid to try to work things out? So
Yeah.
if Black men were being were being said that they talking about what they weren't doing and you would get certain people to that would focus so much on what Black men negatively did, which benefits systems in the bigger picture, but that's a whole nother conversation.
So
What happened?
basically, it was all inclusive, is basically what you're saying.
It was all inclusive, but the issue is we started with the men,
Got it, got it.
and it was really about how do we empower the community as a whole. And
Yeah,
over the
yeah.
years, probably there was probably more women who attended when they didn't know if they could come. But the
Yeah.
thing is there was more women who came, and we have a fairly good population of folks who are not African American who come because of the way we put it together. And which is a good thing, but you got to understand is that who does most of the work in the medical system, in the therapy system, is female.
Yeah,
We can
yeah,
go
yeah.
about why that is, because in the history behind that. So when I first said the conference, one Black woman came up to me, "Oh, you're gonna focus on Black men? Black men, they be causing so much problems. What about us?" I was like, If a Black man deals with his trauma, if he deals with his trauma, you won't have to feel like you have to fix it. And then you can focus on your own stuff.
Or the rest of the
Because
family.
yeah, but again, in our community, Black women have been put in the position of elevating their male partners over the cost of themselves.
Yeah.
So we've had conferences around domestic violence. Last year was around the family, and this year is around Black fathers. Now, we talked about fathers in the past, but we're specifically talking about Black fathers and what, how do we allow them, and I'm gonna say it, allow them to be involved in a child's life early. What
So
does it
Barry, in your practice, Barry, did you see any patients that you would identify as being trauma victims?
Well, I would say at the time I was in practice, very little.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I sort of am a ways distant from a direct practice with families. It tended to concentrate more on geriatric and people dying. And in that one, oftentimes trauma would come up, but it was more how do you reconcile that? And the other reality is that this whole idea of people being traumatized is still something that's evolving. It's becoming more talked about. You know, it was always hidden before. It was not something you talked about. And so I think the landscape for that has changed a bit. If I was back, we can't press the tapes to go back in time and then press the let's do a redo like we can on the show here. If some, if we need to, edit stuff, we can't do that. We only go through we go through our lives once. But it's interesting because I think if I were to do it again, I would be much more knowledgeable about the impact of trauma on so many things, in people's lives. And on the one hand, we're all, let's not make any mistake. The five of us on the show here right now, we all have our own traumas that we all, deal with in our own ways. Hopefully more, we're learning to do it more healthily, I guess, moving forward than not. And I guess I'm struck by this idea of resilience, not as a way to explain away trauma. Well, don't worry, Sam, as you were talking about, well, no, because we're resilient. So the fact that, we live with our trauma all the time and have it for 400 years. I mean, on the good side, there you survived.
Well,
Okay.
see
And
that. See, I have a problem
right. But and
with
yet,
that.
no, I know that. I got my seatbelt on, so don't worry. I know Stan and Clarence and DeAndre, they won't panic or anything. But here's but what's coming for me is, are there some nuggets within being resilient? Okay, not the whole package, because I think the whole package of resilience is survival. Okay, but are there some nuggets of being resilient that can actually be a way to accelerate what people can do to manage their trauma more effectively? And it's a I mean, we can discuss it. I don't have the answer to that, but it makes me wonder that people who have survived have demonstrated some resilience to trauma.
So Sam, basically what Barry is talking about here is our success stories. I mean, you've been in the field a while. I'm sure that you can reflect on some success stories. So maybe that. And then, for our listening audience, there's a great new book that's hit the stands. Go ahead.
Well, see, I'm fine with the ugly. See, too many folks want to get straight to the kumbaya. I don't have time for that. I personally don't have time for that. There's other folks who deal with that, right? And I don't really talk, resilience is a great thing. We've dealt with that, but behind that suffering, you got beautiful suffering that looks good, but funky behind closed doors, okay? And call that resilience. But now, what is the definition of resilience? If we look at the basic definition of resilience, is what? A type of recovery. But if I got a lot of trauma already, what am I recovering back to?
Isn't it a sense of coping?
It's a sense of coping. But again, if I don't have a good foundation that I'm going back to. So now I'm just surviving.
Right,
right?
right.
And so I get credit because I can survive with a smile and a dance that makes you feel comfortable, okay? And then we can all go walk along kumbaya. See, I'm not trying to make nobody comfortable with my with what's going on with me. And then on top of that, what I found is because for some folks, they've been surrounded by a certain type of trauma so long, they don't even think it is trauma.
Yeah.
So if you're not even having a real conversation, it's like trauma-informed care. I remember when it first came out, it didn't have a lot of focus on cultural differences when it first came out, and it definitely didn't have enough focus on how traumatized staff is who do this work.
So basically, the population kind of sensed it as this is normal for us.
Right. And again, the thing about this whole thing about if part of our community believe if being black is about suffering, and you'll get a crown for that,
Yeah.
right? And so if you got a person, and I ask my clients this, because again, my approach of things is connecting the dots. It's not about how folks maybe feel. It's about how do I make you think about what's going on a little differently and having a little bit different approach in dealing with this. I want you to think about this and maybe think about it a little differently as you go, but that whole idea of not being afraid of talking about your trauma. We were, in general, across the board, folks always wanted to hide the ugly because that's what we do, especially
Yeah,
here. Okay.
well, man.
In our community, we were demanded not to talk about our stuff.
Well,
Okay.
wow, this is, I'll tell you, we could go on a lot in this arena.
Say,
Clarence, Clarence, last thoughts.
let me say this. We never really got to talk about the conference, really. I knew that the conversation would be organic, and I'm hoping that people will really, really can appreciate the conversation that's going on. And we're gonna bring Sam back, and next time we're gonna talk more about his book and about the other stuff he's doing. But I think this was a great ch health chatter. I mean,
Yeah.
if that's really what we wanted to do. So I appreciate you, Sam. And thank you for taking time out. I mean, I know that you're a very busy man, and I appreciate you, Barry. I was observing Barry as he went through some of the things. I was just watching, and I'm like, okay. I know we're gonna have some good conversations, but anyway, I appreciate you. Thank you.
Barry, last thoughts.
I always appreciate hearing other perspectives that make me think differently.
Yeah, really.
You know, because when you do that, then you could change in a good way. And that's what I'm
Right.
hoping. So, Sam, thank you. I enjoyed our conversation.
Sam,
And
last thoughts.
well, our conference is next week, Thursday and Friday, June 26th, 27th at St. Paul College. And our focus is going to be Black Fathers, and I appreciate y'all having me on. And I know that I can get a little out there, but again, my whole goal, and it's not like I met it, it's not necessarily agree, but at least think about it with a different twist, right?
And you do that really, really well. You kind of help us get the gestalt of it all, not just a little snippet, but the bigger picture and how it affects health in that sense. I just really appreciated hearing all of this. And I hope our audience does too. It's almost like an awakening that we need to be aware of. And if we could do that through venues such as this, such as Health Chatter or your conference, so be it. But let's do it, because I think it's beneficial.
And one last thing, the book is called Just Sam. And basically, it's a book about my trauma and how I helped other folks with theirs.
Wow. Yeah. Well, thanks for putting it down. Thanks for being with us. Health chat, keep health chatting away. We've got many, many shows coming up. Some of them include medication management. We're going to be looking at autism. We're going to be looking at dermatology, kids and health. And also, we're going to be talking with a person who's gone through an abortion, who's willing to explain and share her experience with us. So, for all of you out there in listening land, keep health chatting away.